Well, guys, in the opening to the program, I alluded to the fact that in a lot of households, in my household in particular, just recently, we said goodbye to one of my grandsons who's heading back to Michigan State University for his second year there. And there are other members of the family who will be heading back to various universities and institutions of higher learning to resume their classes and also to resume connecting with one another and with their families and friends on the internet. And a considerable concern is that when these young people go back to the university settings or college settings, that they're setting back in a place where they could be, if they're not very careful, vulnerable to being hacked and having important information taken from them. So how do they keep themselves safe there? Well, first of all, we have to say that for the universities and colleges they're going to, that's a big concern. And somebody who represents that concern at the University of Michigan and who has been our guest before is Don Welch, who's with us right now. He is the University of Michigan's Chief Information Security Officer. Don, thank you very much for being with us here on the Internet Advisor.
Oh, my pleasure to be back again.
Yes, it is. It's a return visit. And Gary was reminding me that we've had you on before, that you've been very busy in the state of Michigan, involved in computers here for a long time. As a matter of fact, you were the CEO at Merit Network back in 2006. Maybe it was the last time we talked with him.
Well, just a few years ago. Hey, Don.
Yeah. Hi, Gary. How are you?
Good. Don ran Merit, and if you'll recall, Don, why don't you tell us a little bit of the history of Merit before we get into the other stuff?
Sure. Well, Merit was formed back in 1966 to try and get the mainframe computers from Wayne State, Michigan State, and the University of Michigan to talk together. So essentially, networking was created here in Michigan, and Merit Network, along with IBM and MCI, won the NSF contract to try and figure out how to make a network of networks, or get all these networks to talk to each other, or to perform internetworking, which, of course, became the Internet. Then it was turned over to the commercial companies, and we've got spam and Justin Bieber videos, and Merit apologizes.
When I first got involved, it was NSFNet, and Merit managed that, and it gave way to the commercial internet and the web as we know it today.
So we can both blame and thank Merit for inventing the internet. The people who invented the internet. Well, you've had a lot of experience in terms of technology and IT services for a long time. Matter of fact, I understood that you were involved in teaching at West Point for a long time and had a long military career there as well.
Yes. Yeah, some friends and I decided that the big threat that would be facing the nation coming in the 21st century would be computer security. And so we took the initiative to start the program at West Point, much as West Point engineers created the railroad system for the country. West Point helped them, and we thought it'd be very important for West Point to create cybersecurity professionals that could defend both the armed forces in the country, and then also just throughout the civilian network.
Don, what year was that you were doing this?
That was back in 98 and 99.
Wow. And then Merit, and now you're protecting the students at the University of Michigan, or at least trying to, sometimes from themselves, right?
That's probably a really good way to put it.
So I've gone to safecomputing.umich.edu, and there's a lot of information there. Do the kids read that?
Some do. We actually send out a quiz in October to all the students and have some prizes if they'll complete it and get their score up to 100%. And we get about 15% that comply, which is actually pretty high for those kind of optional things. And but one of the ways we try and educate the students in everything, not just in the classroom.
Don, I'm curious, I would imagine in some ways, I'm thinking of Ed's son, Talon, and I know, Cal, your daughter was not that long ago was involved in universities, and I've got grandchildren, excuse me, who were involved in university right now. They come in, I would imagine, feeling pretty much like they know all that there is to know about this. And that must in some ways make it kind of hard to keep them safe.
Yeah, and they also, you know, they're of the age in which their judgment's not fully developed.
Yeah.
And they tend to be have more risky behavior in all different ways, but yeah. that includes the way they use the internet.
Well,
and we see a lot of young people then kind of going back and maybe regretting what they had posted on Facebook and so forth.
Right.
But also those that can have their accounts hacked. You know, my own son had his bank account cleaned out when his debit card was stolen. And so those kinds of things certainly can happen, and they're quite common.
Yeah.
You know, when you think about the university setting, it's a time for exploration. It's a time for open collaboration. And you know, certainly U of M, you know, is fully engaged in that type of activity. And then they want to do it online, but sometimes that conflicts, right, with safe computing practices.
Yeah, it does. The so, you know, for the University of Michigan to excel the way that it does, you know, faculty, researchers, students, clinicians need to be able to explore and make quick changes and so forth and adapt to new technologies and the changing environment, which, of course, is the opposite of the things security professionals want. You want everything to stay the same and,
right.
you know, no uncertainty. So so a lot of what we do is education. I think students on the internet tend to think they're in a place that is trusting and safe,
mm-hmm.
When really they should think about the internet as walking through the diciest neighborhood at night, which you can do safely if you take certain precautions.
Right. Right.
And but you know, when you're sitting in your room or you know, at the Dude or someplace comfortable, you tend to not think that you're actually a little bit in danger.
Don Welsh, by the way, Dr. Don Welsh is our guest here. He's the University of Michigan's Chief Information Security Officer. His task, and it is a formidable one, is to make the internet safe at the University of Michigan. And did you have something you want to chime in? Because I know you've got a student going back to campus now at Grand Valley.
Yeah, well, one of the things that they do is this, they do a lot of gaming, and a lot of PCs have the ability to do, you know, gaming online, and but they also have to do their homework, and they get their assignments, and sometimes they have to post their homework at night with their computers, and if they become infected or their computer's down, you know, they're missing assignments, and, mm-hmm. and a lot of times, like you said, they just make poor choices. It can be difficult.
Don, if there was one thing that you wanted to impress on a student going into the university and onto their, maybe their parents or guardians who are listening right now, what would that one thing be, the really key thing, if you had one shot at it?
So if any of your accounts, you have the opportunity for two-factor authentication, and a lot of people will be familiar from this from their bank accounts, but it's more than just a password. So you know, a cell phone number or something like that, that tends to make it a lot harder for remote individuals to steal an account.
Mm-hmm.
Secondary to that is don't use the password for your email as the password for other accounts that have money behind them. There's, you know, a retail mm-hmm. account where you've saved a credit card, or obviously bank accounts and so forth, mm-hmm. because most, you know, a lot of these sites use your email address as your identifier, logon, and then they'll, an attacker, if they steal the password to your email, then they can go and try it at Target and try it at all these different
yeah,
banks.
Right.
They don't have to know where you shop, but if they hit the jackpot, then you lose.
Yeah, exactly. And as they say, if you hit the jackpot, you lose in this particular instance. Don, hang on a second. We're going to come back, and Cal had a question for you here at Cal Carson in studio. We're talking with Don Welsh, who is the University of Michigan's Chief Information Security Officer. He's in charge of cybersecurity at the University of Michigan. We're talking about keeping our students safe online this year. By the way, before we go any further, I want to thank Mike Sent, who is the person behind the glass today, helping us to produce this first part of our program. Thank you very much, Mike, for all your hard work there. We're talking about in some ways, you know, keeping our most precious commodity, and I just say that kind of tongue-in-cheek, our children safe while they're on university and college campuses around the country and around our fair state. And we're talking right now with Dr. Donald Welsh, who is the University of Michigan's Chief Information Security Officer, and he's tasked with keeping all online security at the University of Michigan safe and secure, which is a mighty tall effort. Cal, you had a question before we went to the break that you wanted to ask.
Doctor. I wanted to know whether or not it's a good idea for kids to use something like maybe 1Password or some type of encrypting software to help them get through that thing if they don't have two-factor
authentication. Like a password vault of some kind. LastPass, RoboForm.
Yep.
Yeah, those are good solutions. And they help a lot. I think the most important thing, though, is your sensitive accounts, the ones that you could lose money through, you really should have a different password. And those products generally help you manage that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. They help you to generate some pretty secure kind of passwords.
Yeah.
Right.
You know,
keep them straight, yep.
I see on the site there's a place to report an IT security incident. Do you get many of those? Do students report incidents? Do they even understand them?
Yeah, we get, you know, I would say probably 10 to 20 per day during the summer. We'll get more when the students come back. So people are always having their passwords compromised. That's, you know, that's probably the most common one. Mm-hmm. And so we, as you see on the site, we've got advice for what to do if your password gets compromised. But a lot of times those passwords are used in spear phishing attacks, or excuse me, those accounts are used in spear phishing attacks, which can be very damaging to the institution.
Can you talk about, just explain that for our listeners, what a spear phishing attack is?
Sure. So if we think of a phishing attack, and it is where you send out an email that tries to entice or catch somebody into giving away their information.
Right.
In a spear phishing attack, the attacker does some research and creates an email message that is custom designed for a small group of people or maybe even an individual. And they're very hard to determine whether they're legitimate or not, because they might look like it comes from someone who you know, or it might look like this person knows you, and it's fairly easy to fall for.
Yeah, as a matter of fact, I got one this week that purported to be from Apple. It was interesting. Exactly at the time that we were talking about this, or that I was researching the background for the show, boom, I get this thing that purports to be from Apple, and it just wants me to update my contact information, et cetera, for Apple, and I thought, fat chance.
Yeah.
But that would be one that would be kind of like that spear phishing type of attack.
Sure.
Matter of fact, do I understand, that I saw in the Detroit Free Press, I believe this last week, that in particular there was a phishing attack that was leveled against the University of Michigan, and it was through Facebook.
Yes. So one of our administrators suffered a spear phishing attack where he gave up his credentials for his private Facebook account.
Ouch.
Facebook only allows you to have one account, so that was the account that was an administrator on our three of our athletics pages. And as you could guess, University of Michigan has some of the most followers of any institution in the nation.
Yeah.
So spammers were able to put content on our site, and for a few hours until we got it taken care of, a lot of people viewed that content, and I'm sure it was worth their while, and they got paid for the clicks that came through that.
And certainly people, when that happens, it goes around on Twitter, so that encourages more people to go to the site.
Yeah.
So that happens an awful lot. You know, as a matter of full disclosure, you and I serve on the governor's cyber advisory council, and I'm organizing the Michigan Financial Industry Cyber Security Council, and we were just up at the Michigan State Police's Michigan Cyber Command Center, and they are getting better and better and better at connecting all the dots. And I'm thinking the university's doing the same thing.
Our capability is really quite good. Of course, we cooperate very closely with law enforcement, both at the state level and the federal level. When we have intrusions, we're cooperating more amongst Big Ten universities and within the state. So it's a big problem, but we're working together, and we're getting better at using tools and training people. And you know, hopefully we will win the fight. But it's much yeah. like my time in the Army. you know, you never come away cleanly. Sometimes the bad guys will win, and sometimes we win.
Yeah, yeah. Don, the University of Michigan obviously is one of the premier universities in the United States for research, et cetera. I'm curious, are you folks also on kind of the cutting edge of cybersecurity as well, looking for new ways of keeping us? Because, for instance, I've heard that passwords really are going to have to go. They are so vulnerable to being broken. Are you folks involved in looking for some other ways of protecting us?
Yeah, we. So obviously, we've got some of the best researchers in our faculty, and in fact, we just agreed to provide some seed money for someone in the School of Information to do some research that will benefit us in the short term, but also then lead to some breakthroughs that can be used more widely. And in passwords themselves, as I said, they're insufficient, but right. the idea of two-factor authentication is a very important topic now, and I think you will see it being used more broadly in almost every kind of a logon, because the password alone is just not sufficient.
You know, I've seen a lot of different types of two-factor authentication. We should explain that.
Yes, thank you.
For the audience, it's kind of what you know, maybe your password, and also maybe what you have, right?
Yes.
So what are some of the options there?
Well, so probably the simplest option, which is is typified by a local Michigan company, Duo Technology, where when you go to log in, you get a little message on an app on your smartphone, and you confirm it. So the holder of that smartphone is not sufficient to log in. You also have to know the password, and if you know the password, you have to hold the smartphone.
Mm.
Other things are biometrics. A lot of computers now come with finger scanners.
Right.
Some of the most promising ones use the camera on the computer to do facial recognition.
Ah.
Some of the older technology are tokens. Some of you may have that count the minutes accurately, and they know which token you have, and so you've got to be able to enter the right number in.
Within a certain amount of time, you have to write that. Right. I know, for instance, with Hotmail, I use two-factor authentication, right. So I'll put my password in, and then it will send a number, like a 7 or 8-digit number, to my text message, and then I have to take that number and enter it as well.
Yep, yeah, and you're very smart to use that on your Hotmail account.
Yeah, and anything, especially bank accounts and anything like that. Don, I don't know if you saw this, but I saw research this past week where they were doing facial recognition on dogs with a 98% accuracy.
Wow.
I said, sometimes I can't tell the dogs apart, but obviously some software can.
I hadn't seen that, but that's amazing.
Yeah, so I can imagine that's going to be an option for us soon.
I'm wondering, Don, if our kids are going to be coming back from school maybe with a whole different attitude and set of skills and tools for keeping themselves secure that we haven't learned. And they may have to teach us some things that they're learning at the university level.
Yeah, well, I certainly hope so, although being the father of four children, it is amazing. They're really smart, but they do make some mistakes.
Right.
Yeah, we've talked many times about the common sense filter,
oh.
And sometimes that doesn't work as well when you're young.
What's ironic, too, Don, and not to dig at this too much, but the recent problem with Facebook that you folks had was because somebody who should have known better got caught with a phishing
yes.
exploit.
Yep, and you know, we certainly want people to be smarter, But we also do understand that even the best people sometimes get caught.
Yep.
And so we want to have other protections in place.
Yep.
So that you know, we don't end up losing too much.
No, knowing the biblical admonition that pride goes before a fall. Be careful if you think that you're safe, because if you're on the internet, and there's always a chance for slipping up. Don Welch, thank you again so much for being with us and for working so hard to keep the folks at the University of Michigan safe online. Been good talking with you again.
Yes, well, thank you very much. You guys are great to talk to because you're always very well prepared.
Thank you so much. That's Don Welch from the University of Michigan. Back in just a moment.